time for The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist on-air show is heard every Saturday morning, 7:30 a.m. in northeastern Ohio on WJCU 88.7 FM and streamed at WJCU.org. Our weekly podcast is available at the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com or download it with your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. This is our show for January 4th, 2020, our first show of the year. I hope that everyone had a happy and safe holiday. And if you made resolutions for 2020, I hope they include a lot of riding. This week, we have three guests for you, including an extended conversation with me and my husband, Brian, about, well, all kinds of cycling-related stuff. But first up is Dean Yobe. He's the managing editor of Bicycle Retailer and Industry News. Back on December 19th, Dean published an article titled, Park Service Disbands E-Bike Advisory Group Over Secret Lobbying Concerns. Secret lobbying and bike industry didn't compute for me, so I wanted to know more. Then we head on over to Emporia, Kansas, home of the incredibly popular Dirty Kanza gravel races. Christy Moan, who was born and raised in Emporia and returned to work and raise her kids there, is the director of the DK Women's Bike Camp. The four-day experience is for any woman who wants to learn, improve, and participate in the wildly popular type of riding now termed gravel. And finally, my husband, Brian, and I chat about many things bike, from Jan Hein's component predictions for the coming year to why laterals are no longer being used in tandems. It's a discussion as usually occurs in our house type of chat. I want to also mention a new weekly feature on the show for 2020, a question on our Facebook page and some of the answers that you give. This past week, I asked, what's on your cycling schedule for 2020? And did I get some great answers? You're going to do some most excellent things, including riding in Ghana in support of women's cycling, a trip to Death Valley, the Georgia Tandem Rally, and the ever-popular Seattle to Portland ride. Many of you said you were excited to get out on the bike and just ride after a season off from something. And one of my favorite responses, ride anywhere, anytime. It was super fun to read them all, and I appreciate you sharing your goals for 2020. So this week's question, did you or will you get a new bike for this coming season? And if so, what? You'll find the question on the Outspoken Cyclist Facebook page, and let me know your answer. Jot down one or two words or a whole paragraph. I don't care. I'll read it all. Okay, let's get to our show. Back in October, the National Park Service announced that it was allowing e-bikes on all trails in all parks. Almost immediately, there was pushback, and the rule was sort of amended to say that each park manager would have some latitude on where and when e-bikes could be on trails. But why did the original announcement happen in the first place? And was there something else behind it? Here's Dean Yobe. He's the managing editor of Bicycle Retailer and Industry News. He'll fill us in. Hey, Dean, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show this week.
Thanks for having me, Diane. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and your family. And let's talk about this article you published in Bicycle Retailer last week. Park Service disbands e-bike advisory group over secret lobbying concerns. Well, when I saw the word secret, of course, it's like, oh, everything in the bicycle industry is secret. So, you know, the Park Service made an announcement back in September that e-bikes would be permitted at all the national parks. We know that's not exactly what they meant because every park was going to sort of make its own determination. But now there's something else that's come up. Tell us about this secret lobbying thing.
Certainly, Diane. The Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility and a coalition of conservation groups sued the National Park Service in December to restore the ban on e-bikes on non-motorized trails. According to the suit, the e-bike partner and agency group met with the staff of the Interior Secretary and the Deputy NPS Director, and this violated the Federal Advisory Committee Act, which requires transparency to prevent secret lobbying. This agency group had only e-bike and mountain biking advocates represented, and that's basically the crux of their argument about the lobbying.
So who were the sort of stakeholders in mountain biking and e-bikes? I mean, can you tell me, was it like, you know, manufacturers? Was it, marketing people like IMBA? Who was there?
Yes, it was the International Mountain Bicycling Association, which is better known as IMBA, People for Bikes, which is an advocacy group, and the Adventure Cycling Association. And they were the ones that were on this email list, and they were meeting with those staffs, and they were also on an email list, so they were also emailing each other too.
So what's interesting is I don't think of adventure cycling as being as involved in e-bikes and mountain bikes as they do with just on-road touring. You know, that they've come from the map making part of the industry. You know, they've been in a non— I guess it is a nonprofit. PFB is, you know, sort of now an industry group. It used to be more public. IMBA, of course, is a consumer group. So it's interesting that these three got together with entities in government, and all of a sudden the Park Service says, okay, we're gonna do this. So what kind of influence did they really have?
These three groups say that they were just strictly providing background information on e-bikes, and that they were not lobbying to allow the NPS to have unfettered access to these trails. So it's basically he said, she said on this.
So this isn't the first lawsuit that was filed about e-bikes. There was another suit not even too long ago. What was that, and did it come to any conclusions?
Yeah, that was in October. It was a group of trail and forest advocates filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Forest Service, and this was for allowing Class 1 e-bikes on non-motorized trails in the Tahoe National Forest in California. And their big issue was that they did this without first conducting a public study. The lawsuit cites a violation of the travel management rule, which limits motorized access to certain U.S. Forest Service trails. What this means is that before opening any non-motorized trails to e-bike use, the Tahoe National Forest should have had a public study that includes analysis under the National Environmental Policy Act to assess the impact of that decision. And that was according to the suit that was filed in federal court. And that suit is still ongoing at the present time.
So I guess I think of Class 1 e-bikes as just pedal assist. I don't think of them as, quote, I guess, they have a battery and it does give you a boost. But I don't think of them as like 25-mile-an-hour bikes, you know, or more.
So, no, they're not.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what the real issue is there, although I did an interview with Dr. Maria Caffrey a few months ago. She used to work for the Park Service for 8 years. She was fired, by the way, another story, because she said something about humans causing climate change, and the Trump administration did not like that. At any rate, I asked her what her thinking was about the e-bikes on trails, and she gave a couple of reasons why it might not be a good idea, including, you know, the noise, perhaps some ecological impact. But I guess my impression is that the current issues have more to do with interaction with other bikes. And is that what the Park Service and the Forest Service are thinking?
I think a lot of it, though, is with other trail users in general, meaning people who are on foot. Many of the opponents of e-bikes are concerned with the potential increased speeds of these bikes. They see max speed of 20 miles an hour as the speed that these bikes will maintain. And they worry about trail damage as well. And, of course, primarily potential conflicts with other trail users because of that speed.
I think about our using the Towpath Trail, which is here in Northeast Ohio in one of the national parks, the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. And, you know, we ride tandems through there, and tandems are pretty fast. And, you know, some of these trails, you can't even go that fast. There's just no way to maintain that kind of speed just because of the terrain and the actual width of the trail. I'm not proponent of or against. I'm not sure what the answer is. Do you know where this new suit, the one that you are reporting on, the secret lobbying suit, stands now? It has been filed.
Yes, correct. That lawsuit is still ongoing. But of course, when the lobbying group, when that ended up becoming public, they ended up disbanding the lobbying group so that they're no longer meeting because they were concerned about the effect that might have on the lawsuit itself. So that group is no longer meeting, and it was primarily because of the lawsuit being filed that they decided not to meet anymore, just so that they would not have any more issues with any sort of secret lobbying complaints that had been arising.
Well, that brings one last question to mind for me, and that is, why did they think it was necessary to do this all in secret as opposed to allowing everybody to be involved with it?
That's a good question. Again, the agency groups tell me that it wasn't secret lobbying, that it was just information, general information being passed, that they weren't advocating that the trails be opened to e-bikes. And again, I mentioned before, it's basically two different opinions here. You know, to get to the actual truth of this, I don't know what it's going to take, but the fact that they stopped meeting indicates to me that they were concerned about the perception, and I think that's why they stopped meeting. And as far as what exactly they were discussing, you know, we may never know for certain, but I guess we'll just have to see how this plays out in the courts and go from there.
It's so cool that the bicycle business has such a, like, sort of secretive thing going on. It seems to me, you know, we always talk about things like margins and, you know, business stuff. But this really affects a lot of people. This affects the e-bike people. This affects regular riders. This affects pedestrians, all of it. So I assume you're going to continue following this?
Certainly will. Definitely check out Bicycle Retailer and Industry News online, and we also publish once a year as well. But, I mean, the latest will be on our website.
Okay. Well, we've been speaking with Dean Yobe. He is the managing director, I guess, of Bicycle Retailer right now. Managing editor?
Yes.
Yes, and he is a relatively new managing editor, and we welcome him to the bicycle industry from his position. He was a Miami Herald editor for many years, so you've got a great background in news, which makes me very happy that you'll do a thorough job of investigation, which I like. I think that's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Diane, for having me, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Dean Yobe is the managing editor of Bicycle Retailer and Industry News. If you are interested in reading the entire article, log on to bicycleretailer.com and just scroll down. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to bike camp. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We're back. I'm Diane Jenks, and you're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. That old saying, send this kid to camp, takes on a whole new meaning with our next guest. Christy Moan is the director of the Dirty Kanza Women's Camp in Emporia, Kansas. And if you are interested in learning about gravel racing in what is the gravel grinding capital of the world, Christy's going to tell you all about it. Hi, Christy. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me, and Happy New Year.
Oh, my goodness. Same to you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. You know, I spoke with Michelle Duffy recently, and she attended one of your DK Dirty Kanza women's camps. And I thought, well, I really need to know more. So tell us about yourself and how these camps evolved.
I'm originally from Emporia, Kansas, which is home of Dirty Kanza. And, you know, after living here and graduating from high school here and then being gone for several years, I really discovered that I was spending a lot of my vacation time coming back to Emporia, which ultimately led me to decide, gosh, it'd be kind of cool to spend my vacation time going other places versus always coming back to Emporia, Kansas, which resulted in me moving back here full time. And eventually from that, meeting my husband. And then through that, we got involved with the cycling scene here. And my husband was one of the original riders in the very first Dirty Kanza back in 2006. He was one of the 34 riders. And I had been involved in our community pretty heavily and was looking for ways to make Emporia a better place, not only for myself, but for other people in the community, and also probably most importantly for my kids at the time. And this little bike race seemed to have some things to it that I thought could be really interesting. And through that, went and talked with the original founders of Dirty Kanza, Jim Cummins and Joel Dyke, and asked if I could get involved and help grow the event, which have been pretty successful in doing. And the evolution of that really came down to me looking at it going, we just really need to have more women participating in this. It's a super inclusive and very friendly sport, and it's an easy place for women to get involved if we invite them. And through that, we did our 200 Women, 200 Miles campaign. And with that, I also just was really discovering the fact that that women even wanted a little bit more. And that's how we'd had our Dirty Kanza spring camps for several years. And 2 years ago, started the DK Women's Camp that was just exclusively for women. So our very first one of those was in 2018. And we just wrapped up the second one in September of 2019. And that's the one Michelle came and joined us at.
I remember speaking with one of the original founders of Dirty Kanza before Lifetime bought it, and we'll talk about that in a moment.
Sure.
And how important Emporia is to the event. Not only that the event is important to Emporia, but how important the town is to the event, and how it seems like such a great relationship, and a lot goes on. So I imagine the town swells during the Dirty Kanza event.
Well, you know, definitely physically, it becomes a much, much larger population that descends into Emporia for the weekend, and not only cyclists, but fans and enthusiasts, but swelling, you know, I would even say we experience that year round, and the fact that we have something that we're pretty proud of here. And we like to say, you know, we're the gravel capital of the United States, and we kind of stake our claim in that and have fully embraced it as a community. It's been a wonderful transformation over the last 15 years to watch the growth of this town from that perspective.
Nice. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Christy Moan. She is the head of the DK, Dirty Kanza Women's Camps. Were you born and raised in Emporia?
Yes.
Oh, wow, that's so cool.
I wasn't actually born here. I was born in San Antonio, but my dad was stationed in the Air Force Base there. And I was born there, but we moved back here before I was probably even 6 months old. So, and they're from here. Like, my kids were the fourth generation to graduate from Emporia High School.
Nice. Let's sort of break down what the women's camp is. It's not your usual, like, rah-rah, let's go to camp and make, you know, underwater baskets. It really is a working camp.
That's a good idea, though.
You like that idea? Okay. Just make sure that you remind people that I told you. That's all.
That's awesome. No, it's definitely a camp that's trained to give you the skill set to make you a more efficient rider. I think most women can relate to the fact that our time is pretty valuable. We're constantly multitasking, and many of us are in charge of many different facets of our families or working full-time jobs, and trying to get training in can be very difficult. And what I realized after riding my own bike for several years, and being quite happy with where I was at, that maybe I could do something a little bit more, and I hired a coach. And through that, really learned that the number of hours I was spending on the bike if I chose to be more constructive with that time, that I could actually improve my cycling skills and be faster and more efficient on the bike. And not that that means, you know, that's not everything to everybody, but for me, it was great to see some solid improvement without really putting any more time on the bike. It was just how I was using that time. And so we start the camp off. The campers get some insight into how they should be coming into the camp prepared from our coaching staff. And then when they arrive at camp, we start off with an FTP test right out of the gate that gives them an idea of where they're at cycling wise. And then they meet the very next morning in one-on-one sessions with coaches to learn about what that test meant and what the data it tells the rider then and there as where they're at. And then we work on skills the next couple days and actually go participate in an event itself. So
I have a question about the equipment that somebody needs to come to the camp with, and that is, does somebody absolutely need power output?
No, you don't have to have power. We do really recommend that you at least have a heart rate monitor.
Okay.
You can come with that simple equipment. We've had people come without and they just do perceived effort, but honestly, the heart rate monitor is kind of the minimal, and those are not too terribly expensive anymore to get to pair with a head unit.
Right.
Power is obviously the easiest and most effective way, but it's not the only way. So heart rate monitor will suffice.
Before we get into heavier duty equipment requirements, I'm also wondering, is there an age range? So how young or old can a woman be?
We've had a huge range. We've had young in the 20s all the way up to, I think our oldest camper was at least early 60s, maybe mid 60s, somewhere in there. The range is huge. The levels are also very, very, very varied, where we have some people that are coming on flat pedals and straight bar bikes. And then we have people that are there that have been triathletes for years and want to try gravel and are looking at ways to come into that the most effectively that they can. So there's a big range in ages and skill level as well.
So you can start out knowing nothing, or you can start out being almost like a high-end amateur, like somebody who's
definitely
done a lot. Interesting. Very interesting. So when we talk about gravel, we talk about gravel bikes. And of course, you know, my husband and I build bikes. So we look at gravel bikes today and go, wait a minute, those are the same kind of bikes we were selling like 30 years ago. you know, goes around, comes around. But there are some differences today. Of course, you have a much wider range in tires and some better materials occasionally. Like, we still like steel and titanium, but what should somebody, or what do you recommend somebody bring, and what kind of tire width are you looking at for these events?
Well, you know, a mountain bike will suffice. It's not going to be the most efficient bike out there. But if that's what you're comfortable on, you know, I think that I'm not from a racing background. So to me, that's not like the most important thing. The most important thing is getting out and enjoying the Flint Hills, being around other people, pushing yourself a little bit. Those are the things that ring true to my heart. You know, that you want good tire clearance on these bikes, because a lot of times you're dealing with mud and things like that when you get out into some of these B roads that are not maintained. So you want good tire clearance. You want a beefy tire that can handle the flint rock. You know, your tires don't get sliced as easily. Obviously, a setup that is tubeless is highly recommended. You can do all of this stuff without. It's just going to make it more enjoyable when you're not having to worry about changing flats and things of that nature. So, you know, those are all kinds of things that I'd recommend. Not necessary, but definitely things that make your trip and your ride out in the Flint Hills more enjoyable.
So do you take somebody through a fitting process when they show up?
We do not do bike fitting at camp, but we have time with our bike shop here in town that if that's something that you want to do, when we do our session, we do breakout sessions in the camp, and that's something you can ask for help with if you need it. So we have a section when the individual coaching is going on. There's also stations set up for the campers to go through where they can learn about ways to carry nutrition on the bike, changing tires, converting your bike into a single speed if necessary, bike fit, saddle seat, saddle height, shoes. There's different sections that are set up that the campers can go visit and get some specific one-on-one help with other experts. And that's also a chance for them to share knowledge, which I always think is really, it's always helpful for me to go to those sessions too, because you learn something from other people's experiences.
Right. Absolutely. In fact, you probably learn as much from what happened to somebody else. Like,
right.
People get connected at these events. And so, you know, you have this instructor, but then you have the people you're riding with, and you're like watching them, trying to emulate them if you know they're better or whatever, or ask questions. Sometimes people are afraid to ask questions.
Well, and that's one thing when they come to camp, you know, I kind of, you know, get on my soapbox a little bit. And that's one of the things that we start off with, is that, you know, I ask that they put their phones away as much as possible and that there'll be time for them to hop on their phones and reconnect. And I know that's important because a lot of these people are moms and they're there, but they also are somewhere else at the same time. So I'm asking them to disconnect from that and engage in this process a little bit. And then also to ask the questions that they're uncomfortable asking and to share information that they may be uncomfortable sharing, because there's somebody else in that room that's going to benefit from that. So we really try to set up an environment that's like that out of the gate at camp.
Really good advice. I'm speaking with Christy Moan. She is the director of the Dirty Kansas Women's Camps. I want to get a little more nitty gritty into the camp itself. So what's included if somebody were to say, oh, I want to attend this camp, what's included with the, I guess, the camp fee?
We obviously have the coaching and the staff that's here. All of your food is included, which is provided by a local chef here in town, Amanda Haig, who does farm to table food. So we do a whole piece on nutrition and taking care of your body off the bike. Your nutrition on the bike is also provided. The entry fee to the event that we do that weekend is included. Your entry fee into Dirty Kansas for the following year is included. Whether you want to do the 200, 100, or the 50, any of those entry fees would be paid for by the camp. Then our sponsors come to the table with just amazing goodies for all of the women too. This year there was, Shimano provided an awesome floor pump. We provided a very, very nice toolkit for all of the campers that came, because I wanted these women to have their own set of tools. And when I gave them to him, I was like, these aren't for your husbands. These are for you. I'm trying to think what else. There's just all kinds of goodies that come,
nice,
that come with camp, which is, and we try to make them all not trinkets, you know, something
right,
that's going to be very useful.
I know that it's not an inexpensive, how many days is it, first of all? I forgot to even ask that.
It's 4 days.
Okay.
And Thursday, I know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a long weekend. And I know it's not a super inexpensive 4 days. It's got a lot of perks, but I did see that there were scholarships available to help offset some of the costs for people. Will that also be the case in 2020?
We're all working on that right now. It really comes down to what sponsors come to the table and how they want to help.
Okay. When is the 2020 camp scheduled?
Oh my gosh. It's the end of September. It's on my website.
Believe me, it's right around the corner there, Miss Christy.
It's
going to hit you in the face fast. The last thing I want to talk about is Miss Queen of Pain, Rebecca Rush. I've had her on the show several times. She's just awesome. Is she going to be coming back?
She did not come in 2019 just because her schedule didn't allow it.
Okay.
I have not talked with her yet about 2020. She does have her own camps now, too.
That's true. I forgot about that.
Yes.
So the last thing, obviously, is as women are interested, or maybe somebody, you know, even though the holiday season seems to be over, what a great gift for somebody to give would be, you know, a 4-day go to Kansas and learn how to ride gravel as a gift. How can people find out more about the DK Women's Camp?
Certainly heading over to our website, dirtykansas.com. It's all on there. And then you can always reach out to me directly via my email, which is kmohn@lt.life. I'm happy to answer any questions and talk bikes with any women that are in, and men too. My passion kind of lies in helping get more women on bikes, but I really am just a believer in the power that does for everybody.
I totally agree. We did not talk about lifetime Fitness. And I do want to mention them because they are clearly breaking into the gravel business in a huge way. And so they mm-hmm. have the Utah race, they have the Kansas race, now they have this Arkansas race.
Yes.
Have they brought something to the table that has helped the camp?
Yes. I mean, the DK team here in Emporia had wanted to do some other events outside of just one, outside of Emporia. And Bentonville had kind of been on our radar. And I think having Lifetime kind of behind us really allowed us to explore that and develop it. They've been great at letting the DK team kind of lead the charge in gravel and really listening to what we have to say and valuing the input that we've got. I think that their big thing is that they really, what they want to see is they want to be providing these life-enriching experiences for people. And gravel, that scene is just such a great way to do it. I mean, I don't know if you've been to Dirty Kansas, but our finish line is super powerful.
So I've heard. I have not been, but I do know that that was part of the conversation I had. It was so interesting. As I said, that's that when the town does what it does at that finish line,
yeah.
It's just supposed to be mind-blowing, which I think is awesome. Well, this has been so interesting. I feel like I'm too old to come to camp.
No.
Oh, you have no idea.
But, you are not too old to come. I promise you. You have no idea.
On the other hand, I usually ride the back of a tandem. So we would have to see, although my husband's about ready to build me a bike that would work out there. Anyway, I hope you have a wonderful 2020. Thank you so much for talking with me. We've been talking with Christy Moan. She is the director of the Dirty Kansas Women's Camp. You can find out more at dirtykansas.com. Happy New Year to you and your family, and good luck in 2020.
Same to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Christy Moan joined me from Emporia, Kansas, home of Dirty Kansas and the DK Women's Camp. Not only does it seem like you get some great swag along with an incomparable experience, it also sounds like it could be a great opportunity for sponsors. If you're interested in learning more, you can log on to dirtykansas.com. We're going to take another break and then join Brian and me in our living room as we talk about, well, what we usually talk about. Bicycles, of course. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
I'm your host, Diane Jenks. I don't always lure Brian onto the show, but he agreed to sit down with me and chat about a variety of cycling topics, from tires to hubs to the rides we're considering for 2020. Morning, Brian.
Good morning.
How are you?
Awake, I
yes,
think.
Yes, you are awake. I can see you. You're sitting across from me. So I wanted to invite you on the show this week to sort of wrap up the last decade, and we can decide whether it's actually started or not, and then look at what might be coming up as we move forward through the next year or so. This week, Jan Hein, everybody knows who he is, Mr. 650B, Mr. Bicycle Quarterly, published his blog talking about what he foresaw for the future. And it's sort of reminds me of pretty much everything we talk about, that they're the same things that he sees that we see. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, you know, some of his forecasts, if you think we're in line with them or you're in line with them, or whether you see something different from what he does. So I'd like to start with the whole 650B tire thing. You've been a believer in wide tires for as long as I can remember. And for also as long as I can remember, clients balked at that. You know, they wanted to ride 19 millimeter, 21 millimeter, 23 millimeter tires, and you were trying to convince them just to ride 25s. Now we're looking at something way wider. So tell me your philosophy on why wider tires don't necessarily slow you down, which was, of course, always the argument.
One of the reasons I think wide tires, it took so long for them to become more popular is that we didn't have, it's a chicken and egg thing. The demand wasn't there, so the manufacturers were not making wider tires in really high quality casings and rubber. So the customer wasn't necessarily feeling the benefits of a wide tire, at least the feeling of speed, which is what they want. It's what everybody wants. My experience was that wide tires were not necessarily slower, but they generally were a lot more comfortable, which oftentimes translates into being faster. Jan was instrumental in bringing higher quality manufacturing to the wider tires and making wider tires higher quality so that people could experience that, both the comfort and the speed.
So have other manufacturers followed suit with that? Or is he still
He's not manufacturing. He's having his tires made by Panaracer in Japan. And other tire makers, I think, yes. Yeah, we're seeing Continental is making high quality. Now, instead of just 23s and 25s, we're seeing 28s and 30s and 32s. Not too many others are going up into the 35s, 40s, and 50s, but it's coming.
It is coming.
I think
Okay. Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. I can remember selling bikes back in the 80s, and they came from the factory. It was, of course, that time it was, 27 by 1 1/4?
27 by 1 1/4.
Yeah, right. Different rim size. Yeah. People would, you know, that was always interesting. So, in addition to tires, we're seeing a complete change in shifting. I mean, certainly STI was just revolutionary when it first came out. Brifters, a lot of people called them. Brakes and shifters in one.
Boy, that was a long time. That was late 80s, early 90s.
I just saw the word recently.
Oh, no, brifters? Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I'm saying Ergo, you know, Campy's Ergo Power and Shimano's STI. That was late 80s, early 90s. The Sachs Ergo Power shifters. And
yeah. Wow.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, it seemed like it wasn't so long ago. Time flies when you're having this much fun. So now we're seeing the electronic stuff. And the first electronic I can remember, correct me if I'm wrong, was a Mavic. Was it Zap?
There was, I think Zap was the first. We went Zap, and then years later we saw Mechtronic.
Neither of which were perfected in any way, shape, or form.
They didn't take off. No. I really liked the Mechtronic, as far as the ergonomics.
Huh. But now, I remember, I don't know if it's the very first STI, or the very first electronic.
The DI2?
The DI2 mm-hmm. that you put on a bike, and you'd been sort of grumbling about it for a while.
I was definitely a naysayer from the beginning, yeah.
And then you put that first group on, I don't even remember whose bike that was. Whose bike was that, you remember?
I have a couple educated guesses. Both of them have the first name of Steve, so.
Okay. Well, Steve's got DI2, and what did you think?
It was nice. It's still not my personal choice, but I could not deny that Shimano had pulled off something really cool.
And now it's a lot of what you do.
Maybe half. Yeah.
So people are still buying mechanical.
Oh sure.
Groups.
Yeah. The mechanical has pace with the performance of the mechanical has kept pace with the electronic, in my opinion.
One thing that's changed a lot is the gearing itself. So now there are no more triples, for example, which were mm-hmm. always problematic.
Right.
And then we've got compact gearing. Do you still get arguments about not having high enough gears in compact?
Not really, because the cranks in recent years, the Spider has been redesigned to accept both racing rings and compact rings. So there's no, the decision can be, you don't have to change the crank to change the rings. You can get whatever crank you want and then change the rings when you're ready.
One thing I've noticed is the changing cassettes. Cassettes are back to what they used to be again in the 80s. Huge ranges, like up into 32, 34 in the back, but not 14. You can actually use an 11 or a 12.
Well, with the smaller chain rings, you don't necessarily want the 13s and 14s anymore.
Well, that's true.
In the rear.
You have no high end that way. Let me remind our listeners, I'm talking to my husband, Brian. He's sitting across from me, and we decided just to chat at the beginning of 2020. Wow. Maybe we'll have some vision. I don't know. So besides tires and gearing and shifting, what other things do you think have altered the bicycle mechanical landscape? And when I say mechanical, I know electronic is not mechanical, but what has altered that landscape that you think will never go back?
Well, it hasn't affected me yet. I'm certainly curious, but e-bikes are coming on strong, and they're only going to continue to come on stronger, in my opinion.
Do you think people who ride non-electronic or e-assist or pedal assist or whatever you want to call it will actually gravitate toward e-bikes, or do you think it's a whole different market?
No? I don't know.
Okay.
And I don't know that it matters much. And people, to providing people opportunities to get out and enjoy a bicycle.
Yeah.
However they want.
Let's talk a little bit about your work itself, which is you are building frames. Are you seeing a resurgence in steel? I mean, we did see one steel bike at the tour this past year.
No, I think we saw our resurgence in steel. 10 to 15 years ago. And it's kind of continued a little bit, but I wouldn't, relative to the carbon and aluminum market out there, I wouldn't call what's happening with steel a resurgence.
Carbon fiber is sort of a forever material. There is no way of recycling it. Is that correct?
A couple companies, I think, including Trek, made some advancements a few years ago in recycling carbon. But as far as I know, it's not an easy thing. It's not an easy or inexpensive thing.
Do you think there's going to be any backlash about that? That people who are looking at environment and climate and all of those things are saying, we don't need more junk in the world?
Yeah, that's easy to say, but
it's hard to prove.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's true. So let's talk a little bit about where you think the industry might go in addition to these tires and shifters and that. Jan Hein says something about, okay, so gravel's been the big thing. You and I look at gravel bikes and say, wow, they're just sort of like these all-around bikes. All-road, I guess, is what he calls them, right? All-road?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy. It's kind of interesting to see the labels companies, the industry, whatever we want to call it, like to put on these categories. But to you and me, a bike is a bike, and we've been building what might be considered a gravel bike since the beginning, you know, 20 plus years. But admittedly, the last few years, you know, with the officialness of the gravel category, we've seen some pretty significant change. I mean, we've got gravel specific groups now. We've got gravel frames for wider tires and disc brakes, not all of which I think are outside the whole solution looking for a problem thing, but it's advancement. Companies are trying, and in many cases doing a really good job.
When you say companies are trying, they could look backwards and look at bikes that were built back in the 70s and 80s that accommodated wide tires. There were never any problems with, well, for the most part, there weren't problems with shifting. Of course, a lot of it was friction shifting. It wasn't, you know, STI. But my point is, as it goes around, comes around, do we have, you know, touring bikes all-purpose bikes, and they really are pretty much the same thing. That there really isn't a gravel bike per se. I mean, you said there are gravel-specific groups. What about them makes them gravel?
Kind of ask that question myself. The gearing is, you know, in many ways, it's the label. It's not difficult to take, for example, I mean, I guess we're talking about Shimano's GRX group versus, for example, the Ultegra group. Yes, they're different, but it's not much of a tweak to just take a little bit of Ultegra and take a little bit of their mountain groups and combine them and call it GRX, which is, far as I can tell, pretty much what happened.
Yeah. So some of this is marketing?
I think there's little question that, when your typical customer walks into a typical bike shop, I don't know whether they want carbon or whether they want disc brakes, but they want the latest and greatest. And what the company, what the industry and the bike shops are presenting is the latest and greatest, which is carbon and disc brakes and wider tires and gravel with GRX. And
well, you brought up the idea of a solution looking for a problem, and some of this has created problems. For example, disc brakes have changed the way they, the front end of the bike needs to be constructed, right? You need a much stronger fork.
For discs, yeah.
Yeah.
Stiffer. And in some cases stronger, yeah.
And so you have to overbuild a fork for carbon? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what changes, doesn't that change performance?
It does. So far, people seem to be convinced it's a worthwhile trade.
Oh, so wait. So we went from narrow tires, which are going to be faster, to wider tires, which are really faster.
Right.
And now we're going to give up performance to have disc brakes that you may or may not need because it may or may not be wet.
Right.
We're going to take a real short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We're back. If you're just joining me, my husband Brian and I are chatting about bicycles this morning and about what we think about what the industry is or isn't doing. One of the things I wanted to talk about, which you are a master of, and that's wheel building. What's happened in the wheel world? I know in the wheel world, Wabbit. One of the things I know that's happened that's concerned you is that hubs have changed, and that in fact some of the hubs that you have used year in, year out have disappeared. What's happened to the wheel market?
Discs is a big part of it. It's disc brakes.
So we know that disc hubs have to be different from your standard quote-unquote road hubs. What are the pros riding? They're riding disc?
Well, I don't pay attention to that.
Well, I guess not. But, I think you know what the components are.
No,
I
don't.
No, okay.
I really don't. I mean, you just said a minute ago that there was a steel bike in the tour. I don't pay any attention to that. I probably shouldn't be on the air. But
that's all right. It's not your realm. We've never really followed competition as part of our business. That we were not building bikes for competition. We're building bikes for different...
Very rarely.
Different client. Well, so has your... You still build a lot of wheels. Relatively speaking, people are buying... I don't know if they're machine or handmade, but they're not building their own wheels, other bike shops, as far as I know.
I have no idea.
Okay. But what are you doing to replace some of these hubs like Ultegra and Durace... With regular bearings?
It's a new phenomenon. I don't know yet.
How are the Americans doing? Are they building? I mean, people like White Industries and Chris King and DT, they're all built here.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've used some of those. Are they suitable replacements?
There are certain advantages to using them sometimes, yeah.
Hmm.
White Industries, for example, and DT Swiss, you can change... conveniently change the axles and free hub bodies between 10-speed, 11-speed, Campy, Shimano.
Yeah.
So there's some advantages there, but the Ultegra and Durace hubs, road hubs, are gone.
It's so amazing to me.
I never thought I'd see that day.
No, I know. I know you came home and said, they're gone. I'm like, what do you mean they're gone?
they're gone. And you actually went to your Shimano rep and asked him to go check.
It took a couple months of him chasing down the information from Japan, out of Japan. But he said, yeah, they're gone.
Wow. Just unbelievable. As we're talking about hubs, it also, the axles have changed. You've got this phenomenon called through axle, which...
Again, disc brakes.
So disc brakes has really changed the entire market in some ways. It's changed the frame, it's changed the wheel hubs, and...
Forks, dropouts, stays, hubs, brakes. Well, the, you know, obviously it is the brakes, but longer... You know, needing to put studs on stays. And...
Huh. And yet, Paul is still making real brakes that could work on...
Oh, sure. There's stuff available. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, all right. Put on your crystal ball hat. What do you think 2020 is going to be like as far as, you know, people doing things... upgrading their old bikes. So if somebody needs, and upgrades are a big part of a bicycle shop's work. You know, if you sold a bike, a good bike a few years ago, people want to keep their bikes, especially custom bikes. And if they want a new upgraded group, what would you do if they wanted regular, like what they had, only better? And now that you can't put a disc brake on a bike that wasn't built for disc, right?
Nope. In some cases, we might be able to figure out something in the front, but no. Not without rebuilding the rear of the bike.
Because the part is on the frame itself. It's on that rear chainstay, seat stay.
The mount for the disc brake. Yeah. It's either in the dropout or.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of sucks.
There's still ways of doing it. You know, like you said, with other aftermarket hubs and. The brakes are still available. Caliper, you know, rim brakes are still available. I don't see them going away.
Well, but if they were making...
Our options will dwindle, continue to dwindle. But.
Well, that brings me to the idea of replacement parts. Are things being supported?
Like what?
Well, like somebody's Ultegra bike from 5 years ago. You need a part for it. Can you still buy that?
Oh, so far, yeah.
Oh, you can. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. So, you know, most people think I should probably know all this stuff, but since I'm not in the shop as much as I used to be, I don't remember all. I don't know all this stuff. Not that I don't remember it. I don't know it. So I want to maybe talk about some of the events that you're going to do this year. What are some of the things you want to accomplish this year in addition to running your store? We have a schedule this year of rides we're going to do.
Well, we have a schedule of intentions.
Intentions. Yeah. Yes. Well, it is the beginning of the year. This is when people make resolutions. What's on our calendar this year besides Horsey 100, right, in Kentucky?
We like to go down to meet friends for Horsey 100 weekend, yeah.
Yeah, what it's really about is drinking bourbon and having a good time.
Okay.
That too. And then... I don't remember. We're supposed to go to the Pittsburgh to D.C. ride.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing that in July with another group, which will be fun. You want to do D2R2,
I've wanted to do D2R2 for years.
And I have never really covered that ride. So I know that Peter Weigel, our friend Peter Weigel, does that ride. What is D2R2? How long a ride is it? That's a gravel ride, right?
It's considered a gravel ride, yeah. I think so.
How long's it been going on? Do you have any idea?
I don't know.
And so it's up in...
It's in western Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. It's hard?
It's supposedly very hard. Hmm. Very difficult.
So you're going to train for that?
I think I read somewhere it's considered the hardest century, or it's hardest and most beautiful century, something like that.
Well, at least there's some reward there. Beautiful.
And it's, yeah, century. I mean, there are a lot of distance options.
Okay, so you don't have to do a century.
Including a couple of mystery routes, I think.
Yeah. Mysterious mystery routes. Cool. What else is on the agenda? Is there anything after that? Oh, we're going to go to French Fender Day. Yeah.
Well, we don't know if there's going to be a French Fender Day, but I would look forward to going back.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was fun.
That was a lot of fun. Saw some really beautiful, beautiful bikes up there. Beautiful. Anything else? Ever wanted to do something like Leadville?
No.
Okay, then.
No.
Yeah. They have, I see, it's mountain or it's or running. Those are the two things at Leadville.
Okay.
Yeah. You completed Hincapie last year, a tough event. Going back there? No.
2018, no.
Oh, but, wow.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having this much fun. All right, so do you have a mileage goal for 2020?
No.
Oh, that's good. I don't have to worry about that. We usually put a sort of an arbitrary goal on how many tandem miles we're going to ride. I'd like to find some new trails this year.
Probably not around here.
No?
I think we know of the trails around here.
Most of them. We ride the towpath a lot. Mm-hmm. And the Maple Highlands Trail. There's some nice trails around here. But you're right. They are getting kind of stale for us. We need to find something new. All right. Well, I guess the only other thing that we need to talk about is what we're going to do the rest of the day. Now that we've sort of covered the gamut of cycling here. What are you doing the rest of the day?
I'm going to work.
Oh, okay. So that means I have to stay and do editing, huh?
I guess so.
Well, thanks for taking time before you go to work today to sit and talk with me.
Sure.
All right. Been talking with my husband, Brian, and we've been kind of like talking about what's going on in the bicycle world. And unfortunately, I don't think there are any revelations here.
No, and that was one of the things I think that came out of Jan's post, too, that this crystal ball thing is really kind of, these are pretty easy predictions.
There was one thing he mentioned, which you and I didn't mention, I just thought of it. Down tube shifters are going to come back? Come on, really?
Yeah, that might be, from my perspective, that might be a stretch as far as a noticeable phenomenon, but a little bit is not so far-fetched. I think the chasm between going more and more disc, more and more electronic, and those of us who still like mechanical and down-tube shifters and regular brakes, I think that chasm will continue to grow.
Do you still have down-tube shifters on any of your bikes?
I do own a bike with down-tube shifters.
Oh, let me rephrase it. Do you ride any bike anymore with down-tube shifters?
No. I do. Our tandem, of course, has Barcons, which are effectively the same thing.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, no, you're right. That's true. Our tandem does have bar and shifters. Ever wanted to upgrade it? That's the wrong word. Ever wanted to change it?
I have considered it. And there are reasons for keeping it the same. I do like the convenience of integrated shifters, but there are reasons for keeping it the way it is.
Well, number one, we have a triple on the bike.
We rarely use it, but yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
No, we very rarely use that granny.
Okay.
Just because of the way the gearing is set up. But.
Yeah.
But that is one reason, yes.
So you're sending our bike out for couplers.
Yes.
That's pretty exciting. We've had the bike, 8 years?
8 or 9, something like that.
So we've had several bikes over the last 22 years, and I really like this bike. I mean, even though I loved our Calfee and our first, kind of Commotion was a cool bike, I really love something about this bike. It is probably the most comfortable bike I can remember being on. You designed it. Bushnell built it.
Yeah.
And it is actually built by Bushnell.
Yes.
Yeah, well, he's retired now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're going to have Blinky put couplers in it? What color are we going to paint it when it comes back?
I don't know.
Oh, gee. We're don't probably going to have a long conversation about that. Yeah.
I've got a few brazon tweaks to make to it, but after it comes back, I've already started some of them, but yeah.
Yeah, I was in the shop watching Brian, take off the paint and place the I guess you were using tape to where you want Steve to cut the bike to mark it. And I'm like, oh my God, they're going to cut this bike apart into like, and all three tubes are getting cut because we have a lateral on our bike.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, what about that? Tandems without laterals.
Yeah. I personally have not ridden a bike without a lateral that I preferred over a bike with a lateral. I know that their laterals are becoming very rare, it seems. They seem to be gone. And I understand, you know, they've gone to super oversized tubing to stiffen the bikes up and make up for the loss of the lateral. But I have yet to ride one where I thought it was superior to a lateral.
Other than packing the bike for transport, what's the point of getting rid of a lateral? I mean, so you save one tube. I know it's about weight, but if you're going oversized.
It's probably weight and the challenges in building. The lateral is, especially that joint coming into the stoker's bottom bracket, it's a pretty complex joint. Getting everything perfect, it's a little more complex for the builder. But weight, definitely. There are disadvantages, too. You lose a lot of, you know, water bottle locations, places to, you know, attach pumps and water bottles.
Yeah, we have six bottles on our bike. No problem.
We can, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes, we don't usually carry more than four. Interesting. Any other innovations you see coming up? Anything new?
No. I mean, hopefully somebody will come up with something.
Oh, maybe you.
Maybe.
You have some cool ideas.
My ideas are usually small solutions to some issue.
Yeah, but small solutions prevent big problems.
Sometimes, often. Hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting living with an inventor.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. That's true, you don't know, because I'm not that person. No, I'm a little pie in the sky. You're very practical. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for talking with me this morning.
You're welcome.
All right, I guess you have to go to work, huh?
Probably should.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
My thanks to Brian for sitting down and talking with me for the show, even though it meant getting to the shop late today. My thanks also to Dean Yobe from Bicycle Retailer and Industry News and Christy Moan from the DK Women's Camp. Remember that you can always join the conversation on our Facebook page with this week's question, did you get or are you getting a new bike this year? And if so, what? You could also send us a tweet at OutspokenCyclist without the E, or leave a comment on our blog, OutspokenCyclist.com. Won't you please consider rating our podcast on your favorite app? A short review would be most appreciated too. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay safe out there, and remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.